Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host, and what I think of as your guide for a bit of a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. One of the people who has been a combatant in a succession of wars for the free world, or its different phases, I might say, is our first guest, Michelle Van Cleave. Dr. Van Cleave is a woman who has, well, given tremendously in terms of public service to her country, working on Capitol Hill in various capacities, including for former Congressman Jack Kemp, and in the executive branch, notably in the Department of Defense, and most recently serving as the counterintelligence executive for President George W. Bush, a very important position and one that leads specifically to a conversation that I'm anxious to have with Michelle. Welcome back. Glad to have you with us as always.
Thank you, Frank. A pleasure to join you.
Let's talk a little bit about, from the perspective that you bring to this, of a counterintelligence professional, of the problem that seems to continue to manifest itself in terms of leaks by the Obama administration, at least some of whom, as best I can tell, some of these leaks, I should say, seem to be emanating from the White House itself and certainly appear to be in the service of the president's reelection campaign. What do you make of this?
Yes, Frank, I have to say this record of leaks has been very troubling to me from the perspective of what we are revealing to potential adversaries about what are incredibly sensitive and ongoing operations on that the United States is conducting. So I have been I'm very alarmed, frankly, to see the series of leaks that we've seen out of this administration, out of political insiders, if the newspaper sources are to be believed, about very, very sensitive matters.
Let's go through a couple of these because, as I say, they seem to be persisting. We've had a physician in Pakistan who assisted our efforts to confirm that Osama bin Laden was hiding in plain sight, I guess you might say, in a compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan. He was given up. It's not so much really a leak, but the Secretary of Defense, then the CIA director, formally acknowledged this. What does that do, in your estimation, to the willingness of others to collaborate with us in circumstances like this? This fellow's now facing a life sentence, in effect.
Well, as you might imagine, anyone who's considering working with the United States who sees that we can't keep our mouths shut will be extremely reluctant to give us help in the future, and that includes individuals like Dr. Afridi, the physician to whom you refer, who's doing 33 years in a Pakistani jail for his role in helping us locate and eventually, you know, get rid of Osama bin Laden. But it also includes other intelligence liaison services, our friends and allies around the world who look at these revelations that do not belong in public view. And they say, well, you know, this is perhaps going to make them very, very reluctant to cooperate with the United States. So that was one issue that the revelations about the bin Laden operation not only led to Afridi being put in jail, but it also revealed a fair amount of detail about incredibly sensitive operational activities of our special operations forces, which is something that, you know, we have been very careful to protect over the years, and I am concerned that our adversaries will look through all of the incredible amount of detail that was unnecessarily released about that operation against bin Laden, and they will come away with far more insights into how we operate, which means that our forces abroad may be put at risk.
A similar problem, I assume, you would judge, Michelle Van Cleave, is the compromise of a double agent who wasn't even working for us. He was working for the British and Saudi intelligence services, we're told, who helped expose another panty bomber plot. Presumably, this is not only bad for sources like him, but bad for our relationship with these what are called liaison services.
Well, yes, you know, Frank, in going after al-Qaeda, one of the most difficult and vital parts of that operation is to get insight into who al-Qaeda personnel are and where they're operating and what they're planning, and reaching inside of that very closely held organization, recruiting sources inside is extremely difficult. So here we had an agent inside al-Qaeda in Yemen, which is a source of a tremendous amount of al-Qaeda activity these days. And this individual who had been, as you said, according to press sources, had been run by the Saudis, had been able to provide very specific detail and information to us. And unfortunately, the detail information that he provided his and potentially leading to his identity was leaked to the press. And I find it disturbing because now you're going to see our adversaries go back and look at all the details that were provided in order to identify not only him, but friends and family that may well be put at risk for their lives because this information was provided to the press. So what really is disturbing is that it's really unnecessary to talk about these things. Covert operations have been so highly protected in times past that to see specific information like this released to the press now is highly disturbing.
It is indeed. Michelle Van Cleve, on your point that there's good reason to be holding close this kind of information, I suppose that you find that particularly true, I certainly do, of the blathering that's been going on about the so-called Stuxnet virus or worm that we are now taking credit for having injected into the Iranian nuclear program. Give us your read on the implications of compromising that particular operation.
Well, I have to say that was astonishing to see attributed to the United States jointly with Israel that some involvement or sponsorship of a cyber attack against the Iranian nuclear facility. I think that we sat back and could applaud that that the Iranian nuclear IT infrastructure had been disrupted at least for some period of time. So the operation in and of itself was fascinating and interesting and important. But Frank, I'm very concerned now if this is something publicly attributed to the United States, that it is just out there with no further explanation about whether or not this operation was lawful. I mean, you will recall that it is the U.S. position that any kind of a cyber attack that results in some sort of physical damage could be interpreted as an act of war. I mean, are we acknowledging that we've committed an act of war against Iran if this information is out there publicly? There needs to be some explanation from this administration about the legality and purposes, in addition to just standing up and taking credit for this operation. So
right.
it's irresponsible, and I am concerned about the potential for retaliation and the kind of precedent that may have been set by going public with this.
Yeah, I agree with you, of course. And Michelle Van Cleve is our guest. She was a former counterintelligence executive for President Bush and is currently with the Jack Kemp Foundation. Michelle, just in closing, and we got about a minute left, Congressman Pete King, Senator Dianne Feinstein, the chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, candidate Mitt Romney have all laid pretty directly at the feet of the White House these leaks. And I just wonder what your take is on that. Does that sound right to you? And if so, what repercussions should there be?
Well, I think they're pointing to the fact that these stories, when they have come out and have all sourced senior and close advisors to the president,
mm-hmm.
and that is very troubling to me because, you know, we have long been concerned about the potential for, you know, insiders providing insights into classified information in an unlawful fashion. Now it seems we have to be worried about political insiders who are looking to release information for the purpose of making their boss look good.
Yeah.
And while while we've had leaks in times past, certainly this is not the only administration that has engaged in leaking classified information, I have to say that in the past the record has been, you know, for other kinds of purposes, for whistleblowing purposes or for fighting about policy difference purposes, but I think this is the first time I've ever seen a series of leaks like this that are clearly styled for the purpose of saying, look what an awesome job we're doing, as though it's some kind of a Facebook posting of the nation's most sensitive secrets.
Indeed. Michelle Van Cleve, thank you for your insights in this. You're continuing good work at the Jack Kemp Foundation and in so many other ways. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon if you would. Next up, we have Congressman Roscoe Bartlett on the threat of electromagnetic pulse, even from the sun. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We have the privilege of being joined by a man I've come to admire tremendously for his service in the United States House of Representatives. He is Representative Roscoe Bartlett, represents the 6th District of Maryland and has done so with distinction since 1992. And in the course of that time, he has emerged as one of the country's true leaders in matters involving science. He has a background in it himself as both a scientist and an inventor, an extraordinary resume, really, a small business owner, a farmer, a professor, and so on. But he's been a legislator for this time and now serves as the chairman of the very important Tactical Air and Land Forces Subcommittee of the House Armed Services Committee. But really, I think what Congressman Bartlett is best known for is his pioneering work, his leadership for decades now on a threat that very few of us appreciate, let alone understand or are doing enough about. And so we're delighted to have Congressman Bartlett back to talk a little bit about this phenomenon known as electromagnetic pulse. And Congressman Bartlett, there was a piece that ran on the 3rd of August in Reuters under the rather stunning headline, solar superstorm could kill millions, cost trillions. Tell us what that's about and why we face this risk.
But, you know, this is not an if, this is a when, this will happen. The last major solar storm that would have done what Reuters was talking about was 1921. That wasn't as big as the 1859, the big Carrington event named after the British scientist who described what had happened. This will happen again. There's no question about it. And if we are not prepared, what Reuters was talking about will happen. The grid will be down. It may be down for a couple of years, actually, a year to 2 years. Why so long? It's because when the grid goes down, it will go down partly because of destruction of our big transformers. There will be surges of electricity that burn the transformers up. We don't have any of those. We don't make any of those. Nobody has any of those on the shelf. If you need one of those, you order it a year, year and a half, 2 years ahead, depending upon how big it is and what their schedule is, and then you'll get one. So if the grid goes down because of that, it will be down a long time. This would be totally devastating to our society, and the headline is exactly right. Millions would die, and it would cost trillions.
One of your colleagues, Peter Pry, was with us, I believe, last week, Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, and observed that even if you could put an order in, and even if that order were fulfilled or could be fulfilled a year on, it may be that the phenomenon of these solar storms would be not confined just to our own country, but could afflict much of the world, in which case everyone really is knocked into a cocktail, making those cost and risk assessments all the more, I guess, realistic.
That is correct. You know, the coronal mass ejections and the solar storm that results from that, if it was protracted enough and our Earth is spinning, it could affect the whole northern hemisphere, for instance, in which case the people that make these might be out of commission, too. So who knows how long it would take if something like that happened.
Yeah. Congressman Bartlett, one of the other things that you have been concerned about in this sphere is the possibility that we might confront not simply naturally occurring phenomena like these geomagnetic intense storms, but man-caused disasters, as they like to say at the Homeland Security Department, specifically a threat of what's known as a strategic electromagnetic pulse attack. Could you very quickly describe how that could happen and who might be in a position today to inflict such a danger to us?
Well, anybody who has a nuclear weapon, small, crude, it doesn't matter what it is. Of course, if it's really small, it's not going to cover as big an area. But any nuclear weapon detonated above the atmosphere causes a flow of Compton electrons and what we call an electromagnetic pulse. If it were large enough and detonated 300 miles high over Iowa or Nebraska, it would blanket our whole country. We had an EMP commission that functioned for 6 years. They questioned the Russian generals. The Russian generals told them that the Soviets had developed and they had an EMP-enhanced weapon that would produce 200 kilovolts per meter in the center. That would be about 100 kilovolts per meter at the margins of our country. That is, you know, South Florida and Northwest Washington State. We have never built or tested or protected anything more than about half of that. So if that's true, even the protection we have now may not be adequate. Even in our military, very little is protected. Air Force One is protected. Some of our older tanks are protected. Our fighter aircraft are protected. But, you know, essentially nothing in the civilian infrastructure is affected. And if that happened, it would take down everything that's microelectronics. You think about the world we live in. If you don't have electricity, you don't have anything. And, boy, microelectronics are involved in everything from the SCADA units that run the traffic lights and control our power grid to, you know, the little cell phone that you have in your pocket. None of that will work after this.
Yeah. We had a small taste of this, of course, with the massive blackout, fortunately a very short duration in India, but it certainly was a further reminder of what it means when the electricity is not available and everything comes to a screeching halt. Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, you mentioned this commission that you were responsible for getting stood up. It operated for 6 years. It produced several very important reports. This issue has been studied. Everybody, it seems, has affirmed that it's a real problem. Why is so little being done? And very briefly, what is it that you would ask that we do now?
Well, two reasons nothing is being done. One is that it's just such a tough problem. The easiest way to relate to it is just to deny that it's going to happen. You know, just say, gee, the probability is so low, I don't need to do anything about it. But the probability of your house burning is very low, too. But I will bet you everybody listening to us has fire insurance on their house, and if they didn't, they couldn't go to sleep tonight until they'd called their agent and asked for a binder to make sure they had fire insurance. Our country needs the equivalent of that. We don't have that. We don't have that for national infrastructure. The other reason that nothing is done, particularly for our grid, is that unless everybody does it, nobody will do it. Because if one producer of electricity does it so that they are more secure, it's going to cost more, and then they can't sell anything. So unless everybody does it, nobody will do it. I hope that the industry gets together and does this on their own. We don't need any more involvement of the federal government. But if the industry doesn't have to do it, the federal government may have to step in and say, hey, you got to do it.
Congressman Bartlett, well, that seems to be kind of at the heart of the problem, is that much of our grid is in private hands. It's a private sector dominated enterprise. To the extent that the private sector is focused very narrowly, typically on, you know, short-term profits, and as you say, especially if there's this sense that, well, nobody else is going to do it, why should I? It seems as though government actually does have to inject itself in some way, and I know you have been working with Congressman Trent Franks on something called the SHIELD Act to try to get an appropriate level of government intervention to get something done to protect the grid and thereby protect all of us. Quickly, if you would, sir, tell us about that bill and what could be done to help you get it enacted.
Well, to get it enacted, we need people calling into their congressmen saying, this is important, you need to do it. What the act does is prioritize what we can do. You can't do everything at once, but you need to look at, gee, what's the minimum we can do to make sure that we have less damage from this, and then you go on from there. But the important thing is you need to get everybody involved. I said earlier, I would like the industry to get together and say, hey, this is something we've got to do, we will do it. But if they don't do that, then I agree with you, Frank. The government has got to step in. You know, this is a national security issue. This is the most asymmetric war that you can imagine. A non-state actor with a tramp steamer, a Scud launcher, which they can buy for about $100,000 on the open market, and any crude nuclear weapon. Now, they couldn't shut down our whole country. They could shut down all of the Mid-Atlantic. That would be Katrina, what, about 10 times over? This would be a huge wound. I don't know if it's a mortal wound to our country or not, but it would be a huge wound to our country. And this could be done by a non-state actor, could
yeah.
it not?
Yeah, well, this is really the critical point. We are susceptible to it, whether it's non-state actors like Hezbollah that works with Iran or Iran itself, which, as you know, Congressman Roscoe Bartlett is putting into place inexorably all of the means they need to achieve what their president, Ahmadinejad, has repeatedly said is a world without America, which I think is very much what you're warning of here. Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, you are one of the great leaders of our country, particularly on this issue. I salute you for your service, and most especially for the tireless efforts you've been making over your distinguished career to try to get us aware of this threat and to fix it. I not only hope that you will be successful in this effort, but wish you the very best in your re-election coming up, and look forward to talking with you again very soon about this and many other things.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak...
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you.
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm a champion, realize checks mechanism.
Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for Rad. It's not your normal PSA. Don't be stupid. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to go out and have a good time, it's fine. But designate a driver to drive home. Let's stop the madness. Don't drink and drive.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. It's a very serious treat for me, and I think I hope for all of you, to have joining us once again Aaron Klein. He is an intrepid author, journalist, columnist, radio and television commentator, host in fact of his own investigative radio program that can be heard on the very, very well distributed WABC. And he is the author of numerous important works, including the one that we want to talk with him about that is just out, called Fool Me Twice, Obama's Shocking Plans for the Next 4 Years Exposed. From WND Books, Aaron, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Congratulations on the new book. Tell us a little bit about kind of the thesis of the piece. We've, of course, heard the president tell Dmitry Medvedev that he's going to be a lot more flexible in his next 4 years. What do you think he means by that, particularly, if you would, in the national security space?
I have the specifics of what he means, because a lot of people don't understand that Obama did not just fall out of the sky in 2008 and then invent what became his stimulus legislation, or craft what became hundreds of pages, eventually, of Obamacare, or actually over 1,000 pages. That his Obama's first term strategy was crafted, was perfected over years, and it can even be argued over decades, by key progressive organizations, and then it just happens to be that Obama was the presidential vehicle to finally get these plans out. Well, the exact same progressive groups, progressive activists, and even some previous legislation that became Obama's first-term policies, but those same groups and activists have been heavy at work crafting Obama's second-term plans. And so that's what this book does. It's not guesswork. It's not that maybe based on what Obama did during his first term and based on what his known ideology is, therefore, this is what he may do in a second term. This is the blueprint. This is the framework crafted and perfected by these same progressive groups. So I'm not arguing that Obama will implement 100% of these plans and exactly as they're written and documented in Fool Me Twice, but there's no question this is the blueprint for the economy, for healthcare, for shock military slashes, for a coming green stimulus, for so-called immigration reform.
Now, Aaron, obviously some of these are people with whom Obama has ties. You have documented some of them in one of your earlier and really remarkable books, The Manchurian President, Barack Obama's Ties to Communists, Socialists, and Anti-American Extremists. But to what extent can you sort of brook the criticism that, well, these are kind of wish lists of extremists, but not something that could realistically be hoped to be implemented by even a president who is no longer constrained by the prospect of having to be reelected?
Actually, it's very easy to argue against that because his entire first term strategy, much of it, was crafted by these very groups. For example, I'll give some specifics. The Apollo Alliance, which consists of a slew of radicals, but we'll put that aside, crafted key portions of Obama's stimulus bill. This is public. This is known of the green portions of the stimulus. Well, they now have crafted portions of what could be Obama's future if he gets a second term, a coming green stimulus. Or the Center for American Progress, which is described by Time Magazine as the idea factory of the Obama administration. They were not only instrumental in picking some of Obama's actual administration and directing John Podesta, the Center for American Progress, Obama's transition into the White House, but also in crafting key parts of what became the health care bill, Obama's economic legislation. So in other words, it's very difficult to look anywhere at Obama's first term strategy and plans and what he actually did and just scratch beneath the surface and not see these progressive groups. And you know, Obama has been very clear that his second term will somehow highlight something called economic fairness. He constantly talks about the rich paying their fair share. Well, just as in 2008, Obama used very general rhetoric, but key progressive rhetoric, transformation, fundamental transformation of America. What does that mean? Did anybody ask? Well, actually, in Fool Me Twice, I have specific plans for economic fairness. For example, for something called paycheck fairness, where the government will actually determine what is the fair value of each private sector job, or living wage fairness, where the government will, if Obama gets a second term, this is what they want at least, raise the minimum wage, the living wage, to meet the basic needs of the individual, including health care, and food, recreation. Now, this sounds very good, actually. Who wouldn't want more in their paycheck? But the thing is, it's been tried before in over 80 cities throughout the United States in the 1990s until 2003, and it failed every time because who's going to pay for this? And it's anti-business.
Mm-hmm. It's socialism more at best, and I guess communism at worst, really. Aaron Klein, one of the things that you mentioned is a feature of your new book, Fool Me Twice, Obama's Shocking Plans for the Next 4 Years Exposed, are even more radical cuts in our military capabilities and investment therein. What we've seen in his first term is bad enough. What are you seeing from his friends and advisors, the blueprint manufacturers, is in store for us in that department?
We're talking about, this is the wish list, but actually it's more than that because it's something called the 2012 Unified Security Budget, which is the recommendations for Obama's second term. But this same report in 2011, 2010, informed Obama's exact policies on the military. So what they call for, among other things, is slashing the armed forces, slashing the Navy, the ground forces, by at least 20%. It's scaling back missile defense and actually missile development, scaling back by $10 billion the military research, scaling back the entire U.S. nuclear arsenal to 292 nuclear weapons, which is something that Obama actually started, at least committed the U.S. to in 2010. But what's shocking, and there are many more specific cuts that are outlined in Fool Me Twice, including to the Virginia-class submarine, to specific kinds of missiles. But what's shocking, although maybe not, to your audience, is that while we have these massive cuts to the military, there's one area of the military spending that is actually going to be increased massively, and that is greening the military. It is clean energy for the military, which is something that Obama already started with, requiring the Navy to purchase this biofuel that actually is connected, the company that sells it, to people who helped to write the stimulus bill, but we'll put that aside. And also to using the U.S. military to combat global warming, for international peacekeeping missions, for more United Nations missions through something called Responsibility to Protect. So this is the thought behind this sort of
comprehensive security approach rather than one that has traditionally invested in military capabilities and then looked in separate budgets for foreign aid and, underwriting of the UN and so on.
Yeah, so in other words, actually they look at the military as the lens for diplomacy. For what the State Department is supposed to do, I thought the military was to fight conflict, but no, actually these key progressive groups see the military, well, when it comes to fighting at least, to fighting global warming. I kid you not, they actually see the Arab Spring through the lens of climate change. They believe that the jihadists throughout the Middle East and the Muslim Brotherhood are rebelling in part because of climate change. That's how 180 degrees, Alice through the looking glass kind of mentality this is.
Yeah, well, based in Jerusalem as you are, as the bureau chief there for WorldNet Daily, Aaron Klein, I know you have a very different and much more realistic perspective on both the Arab Spring and the nature of the enemy that is animating it, the Islamists, the Muslim Brotherhood specifically. We talked about it on your program last Sunday, and I hope we'll have a chance to visit with you here at Secure Freedom Radio about your insights into what is going on in terms of these Islamist influence operations here in the United States, but that's for another day. Thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on the new book, Fool Me Twice. Aaron Klein, it's always good to talk with you. Next up, we'll be visiting with Rowan Scarborough on the deadly improvised explosive devices that are killing our troops, and are we doing everything we can to defeat that threat? Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country
and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show. Welcome in the morning and out to school. Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say
sweater?
That?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are joined by a friend and colleague of many years, Rowan Scarborough, one of the best investigative and national security beat reporters in the country. He has written for many years for the Washington Times and continues to do so. Also has reported for Human Events. And we have been very impressed, Rowan, by some of the reporting you've been doing of late about ways that we can deal with the terrible scourge of these improvised explosive devices. One of the stories that you've been discussing is how they continue to evolve and improve, and that really if the enemy has whatever time it needs to emplace sufficient quantities of explosive, they can blow pretty much anything we have up. Give us a sense, Rowan, of sort of the evolving nature of the improvised explosive or IED phenomenon and what it means for our personnel in places like Afghanistan.
Sure, Frank. Well, you know, IEDs have been around for a long, long time, but it's used radically. But in this, in these two insurgent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the enemy turned to them more and more and more because they found out it was the best way to kill our troops. Instead of taking us on frontally in any real manner, you know, just hide a bomb and wait for a convoy to come, and you can kill 10 troops, 5 troops, and just keep doing that day after day. And it has gone from generally small explosives detonated remotely or small explosives put on a person as a conveyor, to now they're trying to out counter our going to more armored vehicles, the MRAP, the latest edition of that. So they're just making bombs larger now, and they're the so-called homemade bombs instead of being, you know, a specific explosive wrapped around some sort of a metal vehicle. They're building fertilizer bombs like that used in Oklahoma, and assembling a trigger that can create an explosive 20 times the size that we saw initially in Iraq. So really the battle now is to really find these things before they're in place, or find them as they're being in place, or find them before they explode after they've been buried. Those are the three things they need to focus on now, instead of coming up with a jammer or a plow or something like that. They really need to move beyond that and find the makers, the implanters, and kill them. If you see them on a roadway, kill them. And I think that's where they're shifting.
Yeah. In part, they're shifting, I think, at your strong encouragement to technologies that have proven to be very effective in assembling and processing and making sense of, in fairly real time, data about who's engaged in, as you say, in placing these kinds of IEDs. There is an outside venture that is known as Palantir, which you've been on to discuss with us a bit. And then there's a sort of alternative that has been developed by the Army. They claim it's a more capable and multifaceted system than Palantir. But tell us about this controversy now within the military about how to proceed with, as you say, trying to be smarter about who's placing these devices rather than just trying to deal with their effects once they're detonated.
Yes, and of course, one way you can find the bomb makers or find the likely spots where they're buried is to do an exploitation, a link analysis by a very, very good software computer system, and that's what they do in Afghanistan. The first story was the Army, the Air Force, Special Operations, the Marine Corps believe they found the best software to do this, and it's called, as you noted, Palantir. But the Army has resisted their people buying Palantir off the shelf. It's not a budgeted item. You have to go through certain hoops to get it. The Army prefers its in-house grown system, the distributed ground system, that they want to, I don't say they want to push it on soldiers, but they want them to use it. The problem is it doesn't work as well as Palantir. The second story, General Odinero, the chief of staff of the Army, ordered a field evaluation of Palantir. It came back very favorable, the report, and lo and behold, the Army killed that report, had it ordered destroyed, and rewrote it so it was not as favorable. That was the second chapter in this saga. And then this week, I got a copy of the test report on the Army system, the distributed ground system, and lo and behold, it flunked. It is not reliable, it is not survivable in battle, and it has significant limitations. So here you have sort of three strikes against the Army, but they continue to defend it. They say they're going to improve it, and they continue to make it difficult for intel officers in Afghanistan to buy Palantir. So that's where we sort of stand right now. The congressional investigation is underway, and so maybe that report will put this all into one story about what the Army did right and what it did wrong.
Yeah. Rowan Scarborough is our guest. He is a journalist who has done, in this instance, most recently, path-breaking work on unraveling some of the mysteries of what goes on in the national security arena. And I guess just to put a fine point on it, Rowan, what seems hard to believe is that while the Army is doing whatever it's going to do to fix this distributed ground system, if indeed it can be fixed, is that they would deny the troops in the field a technology that apparently, at least to the satisfaction of the other services, and it would seem, as you say, on the basis of their own field investigation, is working or can help save lives in this very difficult battle space. Why wouldn't they just do both? As I understand it, Palantir is a very inexpensive system, and it would certainly seem to me that's a sensible outcome, even if you're committed to perfecting and bringing online ultimately this other Army technology.
That's what I have asked the Army, Frank. Why just let them buy Palantir and let them use it in conjunction with your own system? What is the harm in that? And they say they're going to use Palantir. They want it incorporated into their system so everybody is working off the same songbook. That is their example. So now they are doing tests with Palantir at the Aberdeen Proving Ground to see if it can be integrated, the common defense system, and then fielded that way. But I agree with the point of your question. Just let the soldiers have Palantir. If they say it's working for them and helping them with more speed, find IED makers, find IND implanters, guess where the next buried site might be, just let them do it. And then after the war is over, you know, we can look back and say we did everything we could for the soldiers. I don't think they can say that right now.
Yeah, but it certainly seems that way, Rowan. Let me just ask you this. If I'm right about this, and I think I am, one of the other problems that we have here is that the military has set certain rules of engagement that even if the troops are equipped with some of this information about the source or the implanting that's taking place, they may be enjoined from actually intercepting or neutralizing those who are putting the IEDs in place to kill them. Are you picking up on this as well? And very quickly, how serious a problem do you think that represents in all of this?
Well, you know, the Afghans won during negotiation. The Afghans won the battle over us having to inform them beforehand about raids and getting approval to do that. But we still have the right, if we are doing a surveillance operation, and we positively ID a Taliban, an enemy, with a bomb and planting it along a road, we can take that person out. And that remains in effect today. How many times we're able to do this is classified. They won't get into that mission very much. But in Iraq, it helped turn the tide of battle during the surge when we created this task force called ODIN. The acronym was ODIN, out of Texas. And their job was to stay airborne and surveil the likely sites of IEDs and then just kill the person from the air who was putting it in there. And it really reduced the number of IED attacks.
I imagine it had a deterrent effect on others thinking about doing the same as well. As always, Rowan Scarborough, thank you for the superb reporting you're doing. Thank you for joining us to share with us, and I hope you'll do so again in the very near future. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.